Session number 14806, Eddie Murray, part 30.
Right. And so I opened the car door, and there was the Admiral, you see, stepping down onto the tarmac, some maybe 100 yards away from the airplane, which was one of the Olympic Airways of Onassis, do you see, waiting for us. And he came round, and I, Sir Winston, this is Admiral, so-and-so, you know, the British Consul General or something like that, or military attaché, he was, in Athens. And so he shook hands and, you know, said something polite. Then the Admiral saluted, I closed the door, and off we drove to the airport, and I helped him up into the plane, you know, and Noni followed, and the valet, the luggage was already on. That had come ashore, you see, in a different boat. And off we went. And I was sitting beside, Churchill was sitting there, Noni was sitting here, side by side, and I was sitting across the gangway on the seat on the aisle. And there we were, in total silence as we took off. Then he spoke to Noni, that's Montague Brown's wife, and then she leaned across and she said, "Sir Winston would like you to take this seat, and I am to take yours." So I said, I don't know whether I'm... Well, I want to sit beside him, do you see? I made sure that he heard it. And I heard him say to... I want him to sit here. See? And so Noni stood up and I took her seat. And we carried on flying. And I looked across the old man and he was looking. And there was this puckish smile on his face again, do you see? Devilish. And he's waiting for me to break the ice. And I waited a while. So I said, "You didn't enjoy that very much, did you?" "Bloody awful." So I said, "Well, it was a bit your fault too." "Oh, I know, I know." Then he said, "Remind me when we get home to give you a check." Well, I said, "We'll see when we get home." And then conversation continued. And I only took over and I took my seat back again and read, and lunch was served. And eventually we got... Now, months later, down at... several times, you know, perhaps 2 or 3 weeks at intervals, you'd say, "Oh, I must give you a check." And I would make no comment. And then about a couple of months, even more later, out down at Chartwell, out on the lawn, I was about 50, maybe a bit more, yards away, and he's sitting with Mr. Montague Brown. And then I heard my name mentioned. You know, I've pretty good earsight. And then I heard Mr. Montague Brown sort of saying, "Well, it's a lot. And mustn't exaggerate." And things like that. And the old man was insistent, you see. So Montague Brown said, "All right, I'll get the checkbook." And he went in, he came back again. And then, "Right, you see, now this is mine. And it's up to me. Murray!" So I went across. There was a table there. As soon as I got there, the old man said, "Well, sit down. Do sit down, my dear Murray." And Mr. Montague Brown, he got up, he said, "Right, I'll be off home now, Sir Winston." But I knew what was happening, you see, and I wanted a witness. And so I said to Sir Winston, "I would like Mr. Montague Brown to stay a while." So the old man said, "So do sit down." This is one of the things, you know, but it was beyond my control. I felt that it was absolutely essential that Montague Brown stay there, you see. And yet, of course, I'm sure he still holds it against me, although he phoned me up about 6 months ago, and it was all nice and fine because he wanted information or confirmation of certain things that he'd written. And so, yeah. Then the old man passed a cheque across to me for 500 quid.
A lot of money in those days.
And he said, and that's for the business in Greece. He realised afterwards, you see, that it would have been so foolish, suicidal for him, who tried to walk along, you see, and that I'd been perfectly right. And so, yeah, right, I took the cheque. Thank you very much, Sir Winston. It was not necessary at all. I'll be going home now, Sir Winston, if you don't mind, as there's no further need for me to stay here tonight. Good night, and so shook hands, you see. Good night, my dear Murray. By which time, Montague Brown was already on his way. And as I went in to hand back, I said, oh, yes, I'd said to the old man, you know I shan't take this. I'll go and hand it, I'll go and tear it up and hand it to the secretaries. Oh, no, my dear, you're too generous. You see, and I said, no, it's you that's generous. I was just doing my job, keeping you alive. Oh, well, if you say so, sort of business, you know. But do hang on to it. I went in, I went along the corridor that I was talking about, on the right-hand side, the lounge, that decorated by Lady Churchill. And I glanced in there, and there's Montague Brown, of course, with Lady Churchill. And so I said, all right, yeah, in for a penny, in for a pound. Walked straight up to the far end of the lounge, and there I had the cheque. I handed it to her, and I said, she said, well, this is most embarrassing, Sergeant Murray. And I looked at her, and I said, embarrassing? Only embarrassing as far as I'm concerned. Because, as a police officer, we are not extremely high-paid servants of the public. So I can't see how it can be embarrassing to anybody but myself. Nevertheless, Lady Churchill, I hope you'll take steps for this to be destroyed. Good night, Lady Churchill, and off I went.
What did she say to that?
Not a word. Didn't leave her. No. Didn't leave her. Time to say anything. It was never ever mentioned again.
Did they often, I mean, wasn't there some incident where they, Churchill and Lady Churchill, scarpered from the back door of a hotel, and they were going to give you in the south of France?
Oh, that, yes, the Hotel de Paris. Well, she was, I mean, that was her, it wasn't her prerogative at all, she knew. And I had squared it with Churchill himself before I left to have lunch with my... I was obliged to offer them lunch and on occasions or dinner, do you see? Because they were a great help to me.
The local police?
No, they were from Paris, as a matter of fact.
Well, yes.
From the special branch in Paris, yes. The Voyage Officiel. And it was their job, do you see, to assist me in the conservation, if you like, of the tranquility of Churchill. And so they were there, and they helped out very often with their vehicle, their car. You see, if they were invited, if there were people invited, for instance, to the Chateau de Madrid, they couldn't all go in Emery Reeves's car, you see, and to save getting another car, hiring another car, then there were occasions when I drove Emery Reeves's small car, not a Jag, oh, never mind. It was a German car. Funny thing, really. Or, you know, we went in the police car, you see? And so they could.
Yeah, so what happened on that incident then that she.
And so I told Churchill that I was taking them out to lunch. I would be 100 yards away at the most, on the other side of the square of the Hotel de Paris, of the casino there, the Casino Place. And I suppose I should have mentioned it to Lady Churchill. But then I had nothing to do with her. She didn't, you know, they didn't pay me. It was the state that paid. Perhaps I should have done, you know, as an afterthought. But at the time, I squared it with Churchill, who was my, my job, if you like. And he said, I said, no. And the head waiter here has a telephone number, but I'm just 100 yards away. I can be there here in 2 minutes. See? And that's all right, my dear. Don't you worry. I shan't go out. Shan't go out. And yet, I have it afterwards, you see, that after their lunch, and we weren't taking hours, you know, we knocked it off in half an hour, 3/4 of an hour. And just before, or just as we finished, I got word that Churchill was leaving by the back door. We often used to leave by the back door because the lift went right to the back door, do you see, and the car could pull up there. And so, of course, we dashed, the French police officers and myself, we dashed straight back there, only to be told that they'd gone by the back door. And it was only at the back door that Lady Churchill herself had telephoned the front door to get the key to the back door. Mm. You see? She left it that late to for the warning to be given, you see? And so, of course, they had no other... They couldn't say to Lady Churchill, oh, you have to wait for Mr. Murray to come, do you see? Mm. They had to hightail it at the back door because she said urgently, you know, dépêchez-vous, and her French was perfect, of course.
Really?
And German, and Italian.
And where did she learn those, then?
Oh, she was at La Sorbonne.
Where was she?
She went to La Sorbonne. And then she did the Grand Tour, too. And so there they were. They'd departed by the back door. She herself had got the car, ordered the car. And so they'd been gone maybe 3 or 4 minutes by the time my French colleagues picked up the car, their car, and we got to the back door. And then we went around looking, you know, up toward La Turbie and up towards Nice and to various places. But of course there was no sign of it. Oh, I had a Monte Carlo policeman with us then, you see.
Right.
You see? And he, oh yes, the Monte Carlo police. So I'd taken that, you know, so far that leaving him without protection, you see, wasn't what I did.
Mm.
And so I'd got an inspector from the Monte Carlo police to be there to sit just outside the restaurant. And he accompanied them, not only to the back door, but also in the car and as they made their way. And actually, if the truth were... you know, considered, he had actually more power in Monte Carlo than I had.
Mm.
Whether he would have used it or not...
But who was driving then? A chauffeur?
Oh, there's a chauffeur, yes. We had a...
So you found them in the end, or obviously?
No, no. Didn't find them. We had to wait until they came back. And I waited until he was in bed. Then he called for me, sent the valet for me. I was outside, sitting at my usual table. And I'd seen him go in without going to see him. And I'd watched him and Lady Churchill go in. And then Lady Churchill went out. And then he called me. And the valet came to fetch me. I went in. And the tears running down his eyes. Well, my dear, I know it wasn't your fault. So he was aware of what had happened. And so I said, but it was your fault. Do you see? I told you that I was going, and you gave me permission to go away for an hour or so, that you were not moving without me being warned. I was 100 yards away. I was there, I got here 3 minutes after you'd left, you see. But I said you were reasonably accompanied by an officer of the Monte Carlo police, I said. So you were not without protection. But I do take a dim view of it, having had your promise.
Mm.
And the tears still streamed down. I'm so sorry, my dear. And then he'd already had time, and he passed me a check across the bed. And so I looked at it, 50 quid. And I threw it back, and I said, Sir Winston, you know, you cannot buy officers from Scotland Yard. Oh, my dear, I'm so sorry. Do please have it. Do please take it. And I said, no, no way. And then suddenly I said, there is another possibility, another way, do you see? And I said, it's entirely up to you. I'm not accepting any checks from you, do you see? And I'm sorry that you went off without me when it wasn't necessary. And it had been forearranged. But I said, how about this £50 paying for my wife's air travel down to here for a few days to be with me? A brilliant suggestion, brilliant. He said, then he lifted the phone up, which was at his bed. He said, now tell me the telephone number. And I said, no, you better let me do it. So I sat down there and phoned Beryl up.
Yes.
And but she said, this is, you know, when? Well, I said, as quickly as you can, next Tuesday. And this was probably on a Sunday or Saturday or Sunday. Mm. This had happened. And so she said, all right, all right. I'll be down on Tuesday. Tuesday afternoon. There was a 4 o'clock flight, landed at Nice or something like this. And so that was arranged in front of Churchill. And so I said, there we are. You know, your check is accepted, not by me, but I said, by my wife, to pay for her flight down here. And he said, oh, you know, I owe you that at least. So that was the price of the plane travel in those days, about £50, no return. And so Beryl came down on the Tuesday. I'd organized for Francis Rico, now dead, who was with the Nice Matin. Here we get in the press again, do you see?
Sure.
To whom am I going to turn for somebody to pick Beryl up at Nice Airport?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody that lived in Nice. You see, and Rico lived in Nice. And I knew he didn't owe me anything. We'd been friends. But he never got any information out of me that was not convenable, if you like.
Mm.
And but nevertheless, Francis, he went to the airport, and I think he waited about 4 hours because of fog. The plane was delayed, and eventually, about 7 o'clock, it was that they landed back at the Hotel de Paris. Rico left straight away, and I said to Beryl, "Right, have a bath or a shower, and doll yourself up a bit." There were flowers, fresh flowers from the Monsieur Bro, the manager of the hotel.
Mm.
You know, for Beryl particularly, you know, the whole room was full of flowers. And she says, "What's on?" Well, she said, I told her, I said, well, apparently Sir Winston can't go to open the Scotch Club, doesn't want to open the Scotch Club, and so we are invited to open the Scotch Club on his behalf. And that was at 7 o'clock, I think, half past seven. And so Beryl and I opened the Scotch Club officially in Monte Carlo on that Tuesday evening.
Really?
And we had a wonderful day up
there.
And it's a Scotch Club, and if I went back now, I doubt it, really. But there were sort of little cases at the back there, filing cases, if you like, and anybody that went in there, you know, more or less had to buy a bottle of scotch or a bottle of brandy, and that's where it was with a number on it.
Right, and that's your personal bottle.
And my personal bottle, I don't know whether it's still there, I doubt it. And that, you know, but it was there that evening, bottle of Black Label. And hanging from the ceiling, perhaps about that height as a matter of fact, there are long chess pieces, about that size.
Yes. 2 foot high,
yes, hanging from the ceiling. And right in the middle of this big room, you know, there were tables all around. It was a wonderful disco, if you like. It was a nightclub.
Mm.
And right in the middle was a fire in a sort of a great big wok, you know, about a yard, more than a yard across, with a chimney above it, you know, taking the smoke out. And it was a wood fire.
And that was the Scotch Club?
That's the Scotch Club in Monte Carlo, right opposite the casino.
Right. Okay. Shall we move on to the various people that came in and out? Was Lady Churchill easy to deal with all the time? Or?
I never had to deal with her.
No.
There were occasions when she spoke to me about, you know, what arrangements had been made for a visit to Glasgow.
Mm.
Places like that, you see.
Mm.
And I would put her in the picture that I'd been in touch with the chief constable,
who,
and then always I had to take that route, you see, to tell her it was the chief constable that was responsible, not humble me, you see. And so that she accepted, you know, that a chief constable who's of some, you know, standing.
Yes.
She didn't think much of me.
Didn't she?
But she knew she knew I was doing a good job. You know, she knew that
was
I
that
was...
When
she wrote to me, you know, to tell me that she was giving me a picture, Sir Winston would like to me to have one of his paintings for doing all those... taking all that personal attention to Sir Winston over and beyond my duty. She realised it, all right.
And that was after
that
he died.
I was good for Churchill. That was after he died.
But you said she didn't think much of you. Was that something that, built up, or
no? I mean, from a humble mining family. If you see what I mean, on the snobbish side of it.
All right.
As far as that
Fraser's entrance.
That's very much so. Yes.
Really.
It didn't worry me. I mean, if I wanted to go in the front door, I went in the front door.
But that was.
That was all right with Winston.
Yeah. But that was her mentality.
But that was... I wouldn't put it down as... This was an entirely individual thing.
Yeah, that's the way she thought.
But I think that she was always the same with members of the staff.
Really? Whereas Churchill was...
Very much so. And I mean, I've heard her shouting in German and Schweizerdeutsch at Swiss staff. Calling them, you know, words that Churchill himself would never use.
Really?
But in a foreign language.
In Swiss German, which is...
Which is difficult.
Difficult and
different. Not a written language at all. But I suppose she...
She spoke these dialects.
She probably gathered it from the Swiss personnel that was there. Walter and... there were quite a number of Swiss...
Staff at Chartres.
Staff. Yes, they came and they went.
Oh, right,
they would stay for a couple of years or so.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
At least... Half a dozen Swiss to my knowledge.
What about, you've mentioned Mr. Montagu Brown, and he was from the Foreign Office, wasn't he?
From the Foreign Office.
Yes.
And he again, I mean, he was DFC, you know, he was a fighter pilot during the war.
Really?
And so... I had an amount of respect for him as a fighter pilot. One respects people like that. But then when he started interfering, with the way my work was carried on, that sort of thing, he knew it wouldn't go, and he didn't often do it. But I wouldn't take any truck for it, you know. So we were at loggerheads quite often.
Really?
Yeah. And...
Why? How did that arise? He wanted to do that, but you knew you should do something else.
No. It was usually that he wasn't. That I feel sure that he considered himself to be, and rightly so, the instrument between Churchill and the press. But there were so often occasions when he wasn't there. When the press were there, like for instance waiting at the gate for an important person to come, you know, and the press there. But Montagu Brown would be inside with Churchill or something like this. So he wasn't there. And he suspected, you know, that I was standing at the gate, you know, giving out secrets to the press, which was quite untrue. As I said, I never discussed Churchill's health. I mean, the proof is there that for 30 years he'd had it remained secret, the fact that he'd had a terrible heart attack, you know, just before the Bermuda Conference. And it was 30 years before it was discovered. Only when the papers, you know, after the 30 years restriction.
Yeah. He said Monty.
But Montagu Brown was absolutely wonderful as far as Churchill was concerned.
Right.
You know, I'm sure he loved Churchill just as much as I did. And he was very, very much aware of the diplomatic side and all this sort of thing. And if he didn't know, then he knew where to find out. And so he was always very, very correct with Churchill, too. There were occasions when he would speak rather forcibly, you know, telling Churchill that what he was about to do should not be about to be done. And I'm sure that he kept Churchill on the right lines very, very often.
Was there a bit of needle between you and Montagu Brown then?
up to a point. I mean, on one occasion, we were at the Chateau de Madrid, and on a Sunday, and he told the, there were two police officers there, you see, from Paris, with their car, and he called, not Le Jeune, Gautier. He called Gautier, and asked him to go down to Cannes for the newspapers, Sunday newspapers, you see. He was acting footcher for Sir Winston, do you see? Well, he was looking after Sir Winston, if you like. But he didn't tell the police officer, do you see, that it was on behalf of Churchill. And he didn't tell him to square it up with me. Nevertheless, the police officer came to me, do you see, and he said, Gautier came to me and he said, are you coming with us to Nice, or we're off to Nice? What do you mean you're off to Nice? Oh, yes, Montague Brown has just told us to go and fetch the newspapers. And I said, not on. I'm telling you, you're not going. You see? And you're here on police duties, not on valeting duties or paperboy duties. You see? If he'd come to me, do you see? And so I got you to, ça va, do you see? That's all right. But I said, nevertheless, I'll go and have a word with Montague Brown. And so I went up to him and I said, you told the French police, you see, to go for the newspapers. Gautier came to me and put me in the picture, and I told him that it was his duty to be at the Chateau de Madrid, not doing the paper paper round down in Monte Carlo, or down in Cannes. If you'd said it was for, Sir Winston, if you'd called me and said that Sir Winston would naturally, of course, like the newspapers, then of course we'd move heaven and earth to get the newspapers.
So what did he say to that, then?
Oh, he wasn't very happy.
He wasn't very happy.
Well, he said, of course, you bloody well know. He didn't swear often. Nobody swore to me, really. But he did on that occasion. You know, you know, it was, you know bloody well to say that it's for Sir Winston. Ah, but I said, you have to mention those magical words, do you see? And then we'll, you know, turn heaven and earth over to do it. And I said, but perhaps in the future, you know, you tell it to me first. You know, I mean, the facts are there that Gautier came to tell me.
And what sort of rank were Gautier and Lebrun, Lefebvre, was it?
Well, Gautier, oh dear, they've got different, I suppose you'd be a chief inspector. In, you know, aligned with the Metropolitan Police.
You mentioned.
And always with a driver.
Oh, right. So, right. And you're talking, let's just see, other people that were mentioned. You mentioned Montgomery used to be a frequent visitor.
Yeah, Monty was a frequent visitor. I often think that he only came down there to take photographs, really, and to play cards with Lady Churchill. He took a lot of photographs.
Of what?
Of Churchill.
Oh, just of Churchill.
Yeah. Oh. I've never seen them published or anything like this.
You know? I think. Well, one thing, well, his caravan was burnt down at some stage that he kept a lot of his stuff in.
I wonder.
He had his garden down in Southampton or something.
Really?
Mm.
Near Alton.
I suppose so.
Near Alton.
Yeah.
Because I remember immediately after the death of Sir Winston, when they were starting the Churchill Trust, one of the telephonists at No. 10 Downing Street got in touch with me at Hendon and asked me if I would kindly go down to Alton, which is down, I don't know, Hampshire, is it? Somewhere, or Dorset.
To it's a turn-off down in Southampton.
It's quite an important place, too.
Yeah.
You know, to open up the Churchill Trust Fund there, do you see?
Yes.
The beginning of the requests for assistance with the mayor and all the rest of it. And here they are inviting my Beryl and me down there, you see? And so and I went down there and gave them a cheque and, you know, did my performance and all the rest of it at the town hall or at the community centre or something. A big hall it was, I remember. And I think there was a dinner and dance afterwards or something. But it was a long way for me to come from, right from up Hendon, do you see?
Sure.
It was a long way to go, and I did it with great pleasure. Felt that I was honoured and privileged, so to do. And they were very, very happy about it. And I said to this telephonist, whose husband had been mayor, as a matter of fact, He might have been mayor at that particular time, mm-hmm. something like this. But there was some involvement. I said, well, you know, has Monty been helped you, of assistance? Not at all, she said.
Really?
We went along, he would not come along here. He wouldn't give any money for it. He hasn't assisted at all.
Just hang on, I think we're coming to the end of the tape.